your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this first hour with an interview that Alex Jones had with Peter R. Bragan, co-author of his latest book entitled COVID-19 and the Global Predators. He's co-author, Peter R. Bragan's co-author with his wife, Ginger Ross Bragan. And it's a really insightful interview, and he lays it on the line, and it's really why we're starting it off. And then we'll cover the attack Thursday on the airport, at the airport, and then we'll make some comments with some clips by Pompeo and other people about what's really going on over there in Kabul. So here we go now with Peter R. Bragan interviewed by Alex Jones.
Let me cut to the real essence that everybody out there needs to know. The protein spike on COVID-19 is nothing more than a weapon. And the weapon has two purposes: to exploit humanity and to control humanity. And that's why its origins are with Bill Gates, whose biggest impulse in the world is to exploit humanity, and Klaus Schwab, whose biggest impulse in the world was to develop top-down government throughout the world that would be run basically through his organization, and basically with Bill Gates and the World Health Organization. And they engineered that. They wrote it up in 2016, and I've got these amazing PowerPoints that they gave out to various organizations that actually documented the whole idea being the drug companies would never lose a dime. They'd make a fortune. And there's even a provision that if they make a lot of money, then it'll go back to CEPI itself, which goes back directly to Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab. So we're talking about an intention that is as old as time. It's the intention to control everyone. The best response to overwhelming oppression is overwhelming positiveness and determination. And I think that's why most of the people who are doing this fight are people who believe in something much higher than themselves and their own lives. They believe in God. They believe in some higher ideals. They love their families. They're doing this for their grandchildren and children, but also just for the principle of liberty. The Declaration of Independence says it, given by nature, given by God, however you want to view it. We are treasures. We're much more than the biology they think we are. We're beings. We matter, each and every one of us, the old, the young, the black, the white, doesn't make any difference. None of it makes any difference. We're human beings. These people hate human beings.
That's right. We have to declare our inherent value and our inherent fact that we're made by God, and because that's what they hate. They want us just to be machines that they claim they control. But then they claim they're sentient. Bill Gates thinks he's sentient. He just thinks we aren't. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show here in the third hour. Dr. Peter Bragan needs no introduction. I'm very honored to have him. He's been called the voice of good psychiatry, basically. I'm not going to go over his giant bio here, but he's Harvard-trained psychiatrist, former consultant to the NIMH, who's been called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful efforts to reform the mental health field. And now he's been turning his attention towards the anti-misuse of science surrounding COVID-19. Brigin.com, Bregin.com. And so, doctor, thank you so much for joining us. I know you want to get into CEPI and Bill Gates and this whole agenda and what's really going on. So you're really one of the top experts out there. We're very blessed to have you. We appreciate you joining us on this Friday edition.
Alex, my wife and I, Ginger, who wrote the book together, we're just so glad to be here. Often when I'd get up in the morning, she'd already been listening to your show, and she describes it as her really real deep cup of coffee, and she'd be debriefing me on what she'd been saying. So you matter a lot to us. We feel that you've just been far ahead of the curve on these issues, and you're a godsend. Say it outright.
Well, sir, I've been watching a lot of your interviews, and you're a godsend as well, so God bless you. Thanks for being here. Please tell us, big picture, I mean, what's happening?
Well, we really have breaking news that we're breaking on your station for the first time. And we have found what is the business plan of the predators for COVID-19 developed in 2016. Published among themselves. We've sent you a copy. It's the document with a big orange picture of an injection into a shoulder on the cover. And it's an organization that's received very little attention, founded by Bill Gates. And it's CEPI, CEPI, and the official name is Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness. We first tracked this with later documents, and now we have the initial business plan. And it really...
Doc, you were just... You only cut out for a few seconds. You were saying we've got the business plan from 2016. Please continue.
All right. The plan is begun by, guess who? Bill Gates. It's I thought, come on, it isn't going to be so much about Bill Gates, is it? Well, it is a lot about Bill Gates. In 2015 and 16, Bill Gates got together with, guess who? Klaus Schwab, who is the great reset maven, you know, the so-called intellectual of the global predators. And together they announced in 2017 at Schwab's big meeting, the World Economic Forum, that they were setting up this organization. Its purpose was going to be to bring together the governments of the world, the industries of the world, the NGOs of the world, big philanthropic organizations. But the real connection is between Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, and the World Health Organization, WHO. And you wonder why WHO was so tight with Fauci, who's basically small fry. Fauci, by the way, was on Bill Gates's, and still is, on his very small vaccine, his elite vaccine committee, advisory committee. So you've got Fauci in there way, way back, although he does not appear in the business plan. Now, one of the stunning things about the business plan is it was actually making a memoranda of understanding. That's a legal document. It isn't final in law, but it's the understanding of how we're going to proceed in the future. And Bill Gates developed this understanding, which we have now fully documented with the World Health Organization, complete, literally with this legal agreement that they would basically divide up the world once they had a pandemic to do it with. Remember, this is 4 years ahead of time. And that one of the big deals was that there would be a no-loss policy for the pharmaceutical industry. That's one of the words they use in their documents, no loss for the pharmaceutical industry, meaning that they'd get the governments and the philanthropic organizations, mainly as it turns out to be the U.S. government, us taxpayers, to fund not only their indirect costs, but their indirect costs for creating the vaccine platforms for then pushing through the viruses. They worked with the FDA early on, and some of the co-founders of Bill Gates and Fauci's CEPI, this is Bill Gates and Fauci, co-founders, NIH, FDA, and BARDA. Now, BARDA is the organization that was run by Rick Bright. Rick Bright is a tremendously important villain. I think he is an apt, literally an apt place to be looking for legal cases, for doing research, deep dives. Bright was the individual who stopped Trump from releasing the huge stores that we had in America of hydroxychloroquine. And Bright was in on the formation of CEPI. He is the major figure, clearly now, from all the documents we've gotten now on CEPI. And Bright actually reversed Trump's policy with a few sleights of hand. So instead of making hydroxychloroquine available to the public, which would have saved hundreds of thousands of lives, millions all over the world, because people follow our example, because hydroxychloroquine and was part of the basic treatment for early COVID at home. And when you use it in combination with other medications, all cheap, all extremely safe, government approved, I mean, FDA approved hydroxychloroquine for malaria and other purposes. This drug was relatively harmless. I'm really an expert in adverse drug effects. I researched it. Very, very, very safe drug. And they found that this drug in controlled clinical trials, really mostly though looking just at large groups and studying the effects, reduced hospitalization by 85% if you use this treatment regimen at home, and reduced deaths by 75%. Now, we already start with a disease, COVID-19, that is no worse than the flu, and in many ways is much less harmful because it doesn't kill children. So you start with a drug that doesn't do deep harm to children, very, very rarely. And you have older people, and it's very simple to not
vaccinate.
So this
really shows
anybody.
The predatory nature that they're trying to block vitamin D in the news, vitamin C, hydroxychloroquine, now ivermectin, and I mean, because obviously they don't want people to know that. They want them scared taking the so-called vaccine.
That's spot on. And there's another legal issue here that has not been properly looked at in the media, which is they can't allow any effective treatments because the emergency measures, the EAU, the Emergency Use Authorization law says you cannot have the government doing the emergency authorizations if there are any one effective treatment. So if you have a treatment like hydroxychloroquine, which is extremely effective in treating this disease in combination.
Sure, stay there, Doc. We got to go to break. This is riveting. I want to about where we're going, how we stop him, your ideas, what you think's coming next. Dr. Peter Breggin is our guest. Amazing information. Find him at Breggin.com, Breggin.com. And remember, we can only bypass the censors when you take action. So get his book and spread the information. All right. He's one of the most prominent voices out there. He's a very highly respected author and researcher and psychiatrist, medical doctor, Dr. Peter Breggin. And he joins us. We should also talk about his book, too, before he leaves us at the end of the hour, because it's important to get that information to bypass the censors, COVID-19, and the global predators. In fact, let's talk about the book itself and then the premeditation where Gates said a year and a half ago, oh, you'll need yearly shots. And now they're going, oh, my God, we need yearly shots now. And as you said, you've reverse engineered it. It's all been pre-programmed. It's all been pre-planned. And it's just so bold. It's so criminal. But it's all based on censorship and ignorance and, I guess, being able to intimidate the medical community. But I don't want the medical community, who overall is good people, scapegoated. It's been the doctors and epidemiologists and scientists and people like yourself that have been the vanguard, the vast majority of which have been saying no to this. So please continue, Doctor.
Yeah, let me cut to the real essence that everybody out there needs to know. The protein spike on COVID-19 is nothing more than a weapon. And the weapon has two purposes, to exploit humanity and to control humanity. And that's why its origins are with Bill Gates, whose biggest impulse in the world is to exploit humanity, and Klaus Schwab, whose biggest impulse in the world was to develop top-down government throughout the world that would be run basically through his organization, and basically with Bill Gates and the World Health Organization. And they engineered that. They wrote it up in 2016. And I've got these amazing PowerPoints that they gave out to various organizations that actually documented the whole idea being the drug companies would never lose a dime. They'd make a fortune. And there's even a provision that if they make a lot of money, then it'll go back to CEPI itself, which goes back directly to Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab. So we're talking about an intention that is as old as time. It's the intention to control everyone, to control people and to use them. It's the feudal system. It's the Middle Ages. It's Genghis Khan. It's Caesar. It's all the people who have tried to rule the world. And really interesting, Alex, that just you were so far ahead of all of us on this. I'm Jewish. I really do believe that this is work I have to do. That's good. And Ginger and I believe that very, very deeply. What we're finding is that almost all the opposition right now is from Christians and a few very believing Jews. And these people really believe that the fight is between good and evil, it's between God and the devil. I don't go to the devil theology, but I respect those who do. This is a colossal fight going on, and I think we should be proud to be alive today, because the sights of this COVID-19 spear are fundamentally on America and on liberty. Klaus Schwab has actually written and said that America is incompatible. Its existence as a free nation and as a nationalistic country and a liberty-loving country is in the way of all of his efforts to build.
Oh, let me just back you up. His own Wikipedia says he wants to get rid of Western democracies and wants to capture our countries and capture us. I mean, you talk about the second coming of Hitler. This is as close as it gets.
Well, and the ambitions are much wider than Hitler, and unlike Hitler, they are tied in with our biggest corporations. I'll tell you, by the way, interesting new document from CEPI. I don't think you've gotten this one from us yet.
No, we haven't.
This is 2022 to 2026. Guess what they're putting the next $4 billion into? The variant COVID-19 viruses. These variants, which are, in fact, less dangerous, more contagious, but when you vaccinate people wholesale, you just get more and more variants that are escaping the process of the vaccination. And so they're just lining it up now for one after another of vaccines, and we have to stop it. I want to make a comment on children because, I mean, I think what we really should start with is the mothers and fathers of the world protecting their children.
I agree because, I mean, you see like de Blasio licking his lips going, we've got to get the children. And it's like a cartoon or something. He looks like a villain, a wolf wanting to eat Little Red Riding Hood. What the hell's going on there? You're the psychiatrist. What's happening with these people?
Well, they're predators. They're no different from the people I work with. I've had a lot of prison experience. I've done a lot of medical legal work. By the way, against the drug companies, a lot of product cases against the drug companies where I have a lot of my knowledge from to do this research. But I've worked with a lot of people who were involved in mass murder and crime and so on. And these people have the same kind of personality as the mass murderer. They don't believe in God. They identify with no one. They do not think of themselves as Americans. They don't think of themselves as patriots. They think of themselves as people who are going to get even and going to plunder. And this is who they are. It's who Hitler was, Mussolini.
So they're megalomaniac predators on a power trip.
Yes, that's not a bad summary. And I don't mean megalomaniac in terms of a psychiatric diagnosis. I mean in its common use. I'm not going to make diagnoses here. They're megalomaniacal in that they have these grandiose, outrageous ideas. Well, look at the things Bill Gates has tried to do. I mean, they stopped him in Norway. But
block out the sun.
Out the sun in Norway and experiment whether maybe that would stop global warming. Block out the sun. It's like a Greek mythology. And then he tried to block out the sun. I laugh, but it's so painful and so tragic and so bad. And this is a time when we should be glad to be alive, though. It's amazing to work with people like you, and it's amazing to be working with some of the people. I think you've had my friend McCullough on.
Oh, he's a great guy.
He's an amazing man. I work closely with him. I hope you've had Zev Zelenko on.
We love him. He's amazing.
Yeah, and these are people with a vast vision. They're doctors, they're scientists, but they see that it's now time for this country to join together because we are the last hope of the world. We're the last hope of ourselves, of course. And it's exactly the deplorables who we are. You know, we're the people who think there's something greater than ourselves in the world. We don't believe in manipulating human brain. We don't think the government should be a propaganda machine. We think it should be protecting our freedoms. We have these simple ideas that go back to the founders. And
I totally agree. Dr. Peter Bergen, stay right there. People can – I love the URL because I was saying Bergen.com, but we are theprey.com. That's the best site to visit?
We are theprey.com. If you go there in the next few days and you buy the book pre-purchase at a good price, you'll also get the manuscript. No one's ever done this before. We've been doing this for months. You'll also get the up-to-date manuscript of the book, so the information's going out. Book has already sold about 11,000 copies, so that's 11,000 manuscripts that have already gone out.
Hold on, tell us about this, because it's key to get these lifeboats out there and to challenge the system head-on with Dr. Peter Bergen. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Alex Jones. Imagine world government run by the United Nations and private corporations with big tech censoring anybody that asks any questions. Then we watch the Canadian government, the German government, and others ordering vaccines out 5-6 years into the future that aren't even vaccines, saying, we're going to put this in your body or you're not going to go out, you're not going to have a job, you're not going to be able to get on a train or on a plane. And now they admit, okay, it doesn't really work, but it doesn't matter. We've got more shots, and you see all the police state in Europe and Australia and the horses riding the women down and beating up fathers and grabbing their daughters. I mean, this is stuff you imagine in North Korea, but it's here, all because Bill Gates and the big banks and the eugenics movement who got discredited in World War II, they all reconstituted, and they went and they bought up Big Pharma, they bought up the regulatory agencies. And now they are coming at civilization and coming at society. And their excuse is that, well, we're overpopulated. We're doing this for the earth. But we're joined by a well-known author and researcher, Dr. Peter Bergen, who's here with us today. And we are theprey.com is the website. His new book is on pre-order right now.
Yeah, coming up next is an interview that Stu Peter did with Dr. Jane Ruby. And he starts off talking about the Trump administration when this first epidemic and pandemic was expanded out, that he was misled by many of the people right around him. And then Jane Ruby tells us more of what we might expect in the future from this pandemic. So listen carefully to this. Here we go now with Stu Peters and Jane Ruby, Dr. Jane Ruby.
And I flat out ask him, look, did the coronavirus task force mislead President Trump? Remember now that that task force was led by none other than Mike Pence, the traitor. Okay. And yes, the answer is unequivocally the task force did mislead President Trump. Now, at first, he agrees that a lockdown or a temporary shutdown, the ban of travel, things like that, were required. Nobody really knew what exactly it was that we were dealing with. And as I alluded to earlier, when you were watching whatever your trusted so-called news outlet is, you were watching as this thing started to bubble from China, and then it went, you know, to different areas, and then it came here, and I went, whoa, amongst so did so many other people who are awake to this. So this is going to be politicized. This is coming at the perfect time. They're going to shut everybody down. They're going to promote mail-in ballots. We predicted this bioweapon would be used in the theft of the election, and it was. But Trump was begging these people to open up the economy, to open the country back up. And what was doing it was people like Dr. Paul Alexander were going to the government, to the White House, and saying, look, we have an unprecedented amount of kids committing suicide. We are losing so many people to death who are shutting down their businesses. We can't sustain a country that is shut down like this. And so the tension began between that task force and President Trump. And literally, Dr. Paul Alexander said when he was there at the pulpit in those briefings every day, as no other president historically has done so many briefings as President Trump, and he was standing there trying to update the country, these people were standing behind him, as we know now, stabbing him right in the back. And these people were weaponized, and Trump was dealing with not only battling his own HHS, his own coronavirus task force, his own deep state right here in the United States, but was also battling, you know, the CDC and the FDA, as well as China and all of Tony Fauci's influence, financial backers, Bill Gates, George Soros, all of these, you know, the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. I mean, he was up against a cabal that is unfathomable, unimaginable. And so we started talking about then the rhetoric about the pandemic itself. Does this thing exist? And he said, no, it doesn't. And let me tell you why. And he told us why. I mean, really an amazing interview. It's not too long. It's like 15 minutes. Check it out. And I hope to bring him here to InfoWars, because this guy, these are the people that need to join the parade of brave doctors like the Tenpennies, like the Dr. Simone Golds, like the Carrie Madays, and of course joining us now is Dr. Jane Ruby, another one that has just done a fantastic job. I can't tell you how much I appreciate how responsible you are with your finding and your reporting. And it's unpopular, especially to people like Lead Stories and USA Today. You're fact-checked all the time. You were the first to break the findings of the Spanish researchers La Quinta Columna on the graphene oxide deal. It's now pretty much widely known. Karen Kingston said, in looking at the patent, am I convinced that graphene oxide is in this? I'm equally as convinced of that as I'm convinced that gravity exists on Earth. So I want to talk to you about this. I asked Dr. Alexander about the vaccine, specifically the rhetoric of the president. And he had his own, you know, kind of hypothesis on that. His basic thesis was the president, President Trump specifically, needs to come forward now and say, these vaccines are not needed. Please do not give them to kids. And that would be all that he would need to say. He wouldn't really need to say much anything else other than that. But in your findings and in the studies, because I know that you have your finger on the pulse of the global community, and Israel is quite the testing ground for what we're going to see here, is that population is almost fully inoculated, but yet they seem to be seeing some of the most COVID-infected patients, and that the vast majority of the people that are hospitalized there with COVID, or so-called breakout cases, are actually considered to be, quote, fully vaccinated. Is this antibody-dependent enhancement, and what are we going to see here as the fall comes? Are we going to have a really dark winter?
Well, only if we allow the propagandists and the Biden regime to talk people into it, to use fear once again, like they did last year. Look, in the very beginning, none of us really knew what this was, even those of us who are medically trained. So we had to be cautious. And I'm sure President Trump did as well. And I'm going to tell you, Stu, I worked in the Office of Presidential Correspondence in the White House from 2017 through 2018. And I can tell you directly from my own experience that there are saboteurs There were people keeping things from the president. There were people who told me stories I couldn't believe. In fact, I published two articles back in 2017 to tell that people who were applying through, President Trump's website were being throttled, and that people who did get into the agencies started calling me after that first article to say, hey, our bosses, our managers are Obama holdovers, and they're firing the Trump appointees left and right. So there was so much going on, and also President Trump got, pulled in by, Reince Priebus and the Rhino cabal to trust them initially to set up parts of the government. So I watched firsthand. I would love to see President Trump come out, because we're at the precipice now, and we need him to come out and really get the real story and acknowledge it. But I can clearly understand how he, stop, start, and appears to be going along with it without really being a part of it, because the power of the sabotage was absolutely just immeasurable. It was overwhelming, and I was just watching it from the sidelines.
Well, and that continues right now, as what is the crumbling remains of that Trump administration are still hanging on. I call them dingleberries. People like Jared Kushner, and then you have the Conservative Inc. people just holding on to that. The only thing that they really want to conserve is their access to that Trump fundraising machine. But as long as these pseudo liberal people are around him, that's exactly what's going to happen, is that he's going to be, these gatekeepers are going to protect him from the information. But that aside, and I don't believe that President Trump is part of any cabal, or that President Trump wishes ill on anybody. I believe that President Trump loves our flag, loves God, loves America, yeah. And he would not do anything that would intentionally kill, maim, incapacitate, harm, handicap anybody, specifically kids. I believe Barron is vaccine injured. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I have heard those things. I'm sure that he's very aware of Big Pharma, the dangers associated with Big Pharma. And when somebody recently, just within the last 2 weeks, was with President Trump inside of Mar-a-Lago, the report that I got was, are you going to take down, or why didn't you take down Big Pharma, or what's it going to take to bring them down? And he winked and said, that's a second term task. And so with that being said, the Trump part of it, I'm kind of putting aside and coming to my own conclusions about what he did and the tyrannical, overtaking that he was confronted with. But in about a minute and a half here, what do you expect this upcoming fall and in the winter specifically? Because we're seeing respiratory, transmission, RSV in kids, all kinds of really interesting breakouts happening that normally don't happen in the middle of the summer. Is this a result of these jabbed, inoculated people?
I think we're going to see a combination of things, Stu, and you've really hit on a lot of it. The antibody-dependent enhancement, which is kind of an overpriming of the immunity from people who have taken the injections, you're going to see an overreaction from those people when they're exposed again. This is what we believe based on what happened in the animal studies for SARS-CoV-1. When the animals were re-challenged in the natural environment, they reacted even in a more intense way, more robust way, and they got sicker. What I also think is going to happen is that, a lot of viruses are under the coronavirus umbrella. So many of the people who had the natural disease will demonstrate and be protected by that natural immunity. Why do I say that? Because the variants or the additions, or they're all sort of familial, and your body's surveillance system will recognize them as such. With that said, Stu, I want to give you one caveat. My caveat is, we don't know what we don't know. And we don't know if they are releasing a modified version of what was out last year. Either it was out last year and they co-opted something naturally, or they gain of functioned it by ginning it up, or if they released something that they gain of functioned in Wuhan, China. But whatever it is.
Don't know what we don't know, but I want a prediction out of you, because 30 seconds left here. Are the hospitals going to be overwhelmed with people dying because of this injection?
I do believe there'll be a large number of people but Stu, it's going to be very tricky, because it's not going to readily look like it's connected to the injections, and that's my concern. We have to be very vigilant. These injuries are across a number of different body systems, and most people are going to say, oh, it has nothing to do with the shot.
Yeah, and we saw that coming because this thing attacks so many different organs. You know, you have the myocarditis, you have the kidney stuff, you have stroke, blood pressure, all kinds of different things. Dr. Jane Ruby, thank you so much for joining us today. You're a wealth of information. We really appreciate it. Owen Schroyer is up next on The War Room right here on InfoWars. My name is Stu Peters. Love being here on Fridays in the fourth hour of The Alex Jones Show. Come and find me at StuPeters.tv. We'll see you next week.
We've got next Pompeo, Secretary Pompeo, being interviewed by Maria Bartiromo. And this was about a week ago last Sunday before the attack last Thursday on the Kabul at the Kabul airport. But he has some very good cogent points to make. And then I'll explain a little bit more about the attack from my with my comments after you listen to this. Here we go next.
Just joining me right now is former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He worked in February 2020 helping President Trump negotiate a conditional peace deal with the Taliban to withdraw from Afghanistan. Mr. Secretary, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thanks very much for being here this morning. Give us your reaction in terms of the pullout.
Maria, thanks for having me on. Look, we were determined to get this right. There were two things that President Trump wanted to do. Everyone knows that President Trump wanted to get our young men and women back home. We began the march towards doing that, but we always knew that conditions had to be right to achieve that. And we had to have the situation on the ground right to do that. This administration just willy-nilly with the military out of there, leaving civilians, equipment, all of those things behind. We drew down from 15,000 or just over that to about 2,500, and we had kept the order that had been there. Right, we didn't have this chaos. All the while, we took out 12,500 soldiers. When we got to that point, we went back. We looked at the conditions. We wanted to get those last numbers out, but we never found the conditions right to do so. And so we continued to pound the Taliban when they violated the agreement. Right, when they moved on a checkpoint or moved in a place that they weren't permitted to, we used American power and made clear to the Taliban that there would be real consequences. What happened here, Maria, is you had a leader who was unprepared to do that. When the Taliban pushed on the Trump administration, we pushed back even harder and imposed real costs on them. When the Taliban pushed on the Biden administration, they withdrew to a commercial airport that in no way has the capacity to get our people out of there with the speed and alacrity that needs to happen to keep them safe. This is an incompetent method of getting our folks out. It presents real risk. I pray we get them all home. But I'm watching today, even now, they haven't yet organized in a way to push American power out in a way to make sure we can get Americans out of the country.
And things are getting dangerous and more severe by the minute. This morning, the Washington Post is reporting that those people going to the airport are getting beaten up, and there were seven Afghan civilians killed outside the Kabul airport as Biden set to update on evacuations later today. Mr. Secretary, does Joe Biden understand what has taken place here? I mean, I don't even understand why you would close the Bagram Air Base before getting all of your civilians out.
Well, I must say, given what he's told America and what we can see happening on the ground and the massive disconnect between those two, it certainly doesn't appear that he understands, or perhaps less. He's just not that interested. He's more focused on spending $3.5 trillion or creating diversity inside of our military. It's impossible to explain how the President of the United States can go on TV and tell people that not only are people able to travel safely to the airport when we can clearly see that that's not the case, but he told the world that our allies weren't concerned about what we were doing. And you need only go to the British Parliament or listen to Macron or Merkel. All of them are concerned that they no longer can trust America as a partner and ally. So there is a deep disconnection between what President Biden has told the American people and what they can all see with their own eyes to be true. This is dangerous. We're just a few months into this administration, and American leadership has already walked off the stage. You know, Maria, we've talked about this before, but President Biden talks about them, that America is back. It looks like we're back. It looks like we're back to Barack Obama, America apologizing, American weakness, and our adversaries not fearing us and our friends not trusting us.
And we have to point out that many of the people on Biden's team, whether it be national security or in the State Department, were in fact in the Obama White House. How capable are his defense and foreign policy teams, in your view, including your successor, Tony Blinken? We know that there was a memo emerged, revealed this past week, indicating that Joe Biden was warned that this would happen this way, and he ignored the warnings.
Well, there's no doubt it's the same team that was there for 8 years largely. They've all moved up one slot or two slots, but it's largely the same cast of characters with the same worldview, right? This is a worldview that says America is the problem set. It's a worldview that says that these details, these important details, right? Closing Bagram, the major airflow hub for American forces and American equipment in and out of the country, and pulling out the military before the civilians got out, and not working with friends and partners to make sure this was coordinated, and most importantly, not validating that the conditions on the ground were sufficient to actually execute this stage of the withdrawal. But those are demonstrably geopolitical errors, tactical errors that this administration has made. They've not yet moved to fix them. I pray that we get this right. It's important not only for the people of Afghanistan and the Americans who are trapped there, but as important as Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping and Chairman Kim stare at the United States today, they're watching this weakness. They're watching America destroy its alliances. And this presents enormous risk to the American people right here at home.
Exactly. And the mixed messages have been incredibly dangerous. Last week, President Biden told the Americans in Afghanistan to get to the airport so that the U.S. can get them home. And then this weekend, we were told, don't go to the airport. It's too dangerous. They are terrorists right outside the airport. The gates are locked. They're confiscating passports. What's going on? Should Americans go to the airport or not go to the airport?
Well, I must say, I don't have accurate situational knowledge of what's on the ground, although I have heard from some folks in the region. It certainly sounds like passage to that airport is very dangerous today. America needs to work to secure that, to reduce that risk. There are lots of ways to do that. How about this, Maria, for a starting point? Make very clear that you're not going to beg the Taliban. You're not going to implore. You're not going to plead. You're not going to pay the Taliban. If Americans are harmed as they move to the airport, you're going to go and crush them. You're going to put real costs on them. This is the model that the Trump administration had adopted. And each time we did that, we got a tactical response from the Taliban that respected the United States of America because they understood that there were things that they would not be permitted to do. Most importantly, harming Americans. Remember this, Maria. From the time we began our peace and reconciliation effort, our conversations, from the time we signed that deal in February 2020, not a single American was attacked by the Taliban in a serious way, and there wasn't a single American killed. That wasn't because the document, or we were going to go to court to enforce this document. It was because we demonstrated American resolve and power. And when you don't do that, this is the kind of thing, this chaos that you're seeing today in Afghanistan is precisely what ensues when America fails to lead.
So they've already broken whatever agreement was made in Doha. I'm talking about the Taliban. I mean, was this a coup?
You know, between the folks in Afghanistan, right, President Ghani was corrupt himself, the leaders in the other regions, we were talking to all of them. Remember, we didn't just sign an agreement with the Taliban. We had one with the Afghan government, too. We were talking to folks in the north and folks in the west. This country's been a mess for an awfully long time. Its elections have been incredibly fraught. This is a country that has had political uncertainty for an awfully long time. Our mission set was very clear, Maria. Our mission set was to make sure that we were able to get our young men and women home, and second, to make sure that we were never attacked from this place again. And we worked diligently to make sure that as we saw the conditions on the ground, that we withdrew in a way that provided maximal certainty that we would never be attacked from this place again. This chaos you're seeing today, Maria,
yeah,
I think this drastically increases the likelihood that someday some ungoverned space in Afghanistan will lead to an attack, maybe not on America, but on American interests somewhere in the world.
Right. And they have the weaponry now to do it. Mr. Secretary, I want to take a short break. And I want to get back and come back and talk about something you touched on, and that is the longer term consequences of all of this. And then what actions the U.S. military needs to take now to prevent the Taliban from driving Afghanistan further into a terrorism state. We'll be right back with Secretary Mike Pompeo. Welcome back, and we are back with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, also a Fox News contributor. Let me point out that we are also following the latest on Tropical Storm Henri. You can look on the side of your screen to get the very latest. We'll be doing that all day. Mr. Secretary, I've got to get your take on the consequences of this cut-and-run pullout of Afghanistan. The historian Bernard Lewis worried that the greatest danger to global stability is when America comes to be seen as harmless as an enemy and treacherous as a friend. This is something Larry Lindsay posted last week, And I want to bring up this Global Times tweet. This, of course, the Global Times is the international mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party. And as soon as we saw the cut and run out of Afghanistan, the editor-in-chief of Global Times tweets this. After the fall of the Kabul regime, the Taiwan authorities must be trembling. Don't look forward to the U.S. to protect them. Taipei officials need to quietly mail order a five-star red flag from the Chinese mainland. It will be useful one day when they surrender to the People's Liberation Army. Your thoughts on the long-term consequences and what that tweet from the Global Times indicates, Secretary?
Well, Maria, the Global Times is a propaganda mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party, so that's just them poking fun at a weak administration in America. But here's the truth of the matter is this debacle will certainly harm America's credibility with its friends and allies. It's already being talked about. You've seen some of it publicly, but there's lots of talk in private about can this president, can this American leadership team that's been assembled around President Biden, can they actually deliver? And so my wisdom would be this. So this is an enormous amount of damage to American credibility. How about starting today to rebuild that credibility? You can think of half a dozen things off the top of your head that could begin to demonstrate to the world that we're not harmless. Indeed, we're powerful. How about this? Walk away from the negotiations in Vienna. Tell the Iranians, nope, we're done. We are out. How about this? Help the Taiwanese close on some of the defense and trade deals that we started with them. Start actually delivering those weapon systems. Same for the Emiratis. We have an F-35 set with them. Why don't we move that forward? Demonstrate that we're going to be good partners to the Emiratis. If you're President Zelensky in Ukraine, you have to be worried. How about if the United States began to work closer with the Ukrainians to make sure that we were going to prevent Vladimir Putin from taking another chunk of Ukraine like they did under the Obama administration? How about this, Maria? How about announcing today that we're not going to show up in Beijing for the Genocide Olympics? We're not going to send our kids there and become supplicants to the Chinese Communist Party. These are the kind of things that world leaders are looking for. They're looking to show American resolve and strength. I hope that the Biden team has it within them to deliver on these kinds of clear actions, not just words, but actions that will convince leaders around the world that we remain a strong force, a strong partner. And that'll tell our adversaries a lot, too. It'll tell them that you cannot challenge the United States without real costs being imposed on you.
All incredibly important analysis. Why aren't we doing what the French government is doing, going in there and getting Americans out the way they're getting their French out?
It's been a long week, Maria, but I have to tell you, maybe the most disheartening moment was when I heard our Secretary of Defense say that we didn't have the capability to do that. That is nonsense. That is nonsense. I'm a veteran. I know the capabilities of our young men and women. We could deliver just the same way the French in the United Kingdom are delivering for their people. To hear that defeatist mentality, to say that we don't have the capacity to do that, first of all, it's untrue. What they have not demonstrated yet is the will to do this. I hope they'll find that.
Yeah.
I hope they'll find that steel, that resolve. I pray that we get all these Americans home. We have an obligation, a solemn obligation, to make sure that we're able to do so.
Secretary Pompeo, before you go, a question none of us want to ask, but I must. Is Joe Biden mentally capable to be in this role at this moment in time?
Well, I will tell you, this has been a really tough week to watch our president just be so disconnected from the reality we can all see. I pray that they get this right. I hope that President Biden is up to the task. Today he's demonstrated that in Afghanistan he has failed. The incompetence demonstrated this past week has been tragic. It will have long-lasting implications. I hope they're able to right the ship and get this right. I know every American wishes that for our entire country.
Of course. And we are all patriots. Secretary, thanks very much for weighing in this morning.
Thank you, Maria. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk soon along the way.
I just want to make some quick comments on what happened over there. According to Pompeo, there was no deadlines until the Taliban had accomplished certain things. And what they were trying to finally agree upon and conclude, their goal was an integrated government between the existing Afghan government and the Taliban, But that didn't get done when, according to some of the generals there, they had to make a decision, they said, to provide cover for the embassy instead of Basra. That's why they closed Basra. That was a major blunder because Basra gave air support for the Afghan army when they let down on the air cover and the air support that we were providing. Then they quit, and then Ghani, the president, left. So when the Taliban got to the outskirts of Kabul, they didn't have a government to deal with, and they wanted a political settlement, according to their spokesman. So they just went in and took Kabul. And the blunder was they could have sent additional troops in to cover both the Basra air base and the embassy for protection. But they didn't do that. And the August 31st was not a drop dead deadline, according to Pompeo. So they completely blew this thing. And so, I mean, it was just a major blunder, and Biden did not consult his allies or any of the NATO people before he made these decisions. And he said the buck stops with him, and it really does, because it was a major mistake and blunder, that President Joseph Biden committed all by himself. He had other advice not to do what he finally did. And this blew up in his face. I'll make a few comments next about who committed. The Taliban is saying that ISIS-K, and they're saying now that they took responsibility for the attack on the Kabul airport there. But there's problems with that. And some of the briefings, they're saying an IED was their explosives, and now they're saying no, it was a suicide vest. But you had 13 of our soldiers that died, and you had 172 Afghan civilians outside of that gate, the Abbey Gate. So it had to be bigger. Was it an IED that had been buried there before we got in there and took control of that? Who knows for sure? They're not telling us exactly what went down. And some people, there was one interview that I heard that said, with an explosives expert, that said it had to be some kind of IED, and it was buried or somewhere down by the sewage. There was a sewage ditch in there. And so that does make sense, that that's what could have been there, and they blew it up with a remote control or something like that. They're saying now it's only one bomb, but it did devastate, and we lost 13 of our really good people there, 12 Marines and a medic, a Navy medic, a corpsman. And so this is just ballooning into the biggest debacle that we've ever had. So what we're going to come up with next is, yes, what's coming up next is a woman with India Today, and she's going to be explaining Nabila Jamal with a quick comment on ISIS-K. But we're not sure they really did this, and they're all mixed up over there. But here we go with a real quick description of ISIS-K by Nabila Jamal with India Today.
As desperate Afghans crowd the Kabul airport trying to get any evacuation flight to flee Afghanistan away from the Taliban, officials have now warned of threat from another jihadist group. The new threat is the Islamic State of the Khorasan, a local Daesh affiliate. So how can the ISIS-K be another threat? Let's decode this for you. What is this Islamic State Khorasan? The Islamic State Khorasan province is relatively new group compared to the Taliban. Back in 2015, the extremist group ISIS sought to extend its geographical reach beyond Iraq and Syria. Therefore, in Jan 2015, the ISIS-K was established in Nangarhar province of eastern Afghanistan. It actively recruited defectors from the Taliban, in particular, those who were discontent with their own leadership's lack of success on the battlefield. It all happened months after the Islamic State declared a caliphate in Iraq and Syria in 2014. So breakaway fighters from the Pakistani Taliban pledged allegiance to the IS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. How much damage has ISIS-K done? According to the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the group has been responsible for nearly 100 attacks against civilians in Afghanistan and Pakistan, as well as roughly 250 clashes with the United States, Afghan and Pakistani security forces since January 2017. It has massacred civilians in both the countries at mosques, shrines, public squares, and even hospitals. The group has specially targeted Muslims from sects that it considered heretical, including Shias. It also managed to set up sleeper cells in other parts of Pakistan and Afghanistan. What is ISIS Khorasan's relationship with the Taliban? While both groups are hardline Sunni Islamist militants, there is no love lost between them. The Taliban and ISIS-K are known to be sworn enemies and have been fighting one another over territory for long now. They have differed on the ideology of religion and strategy, while claiming to be the flag bearers, true flag bearers of jihad. Now, how has it reacted to the Taliban's victory in Afghanistan? The leaders of the Islamic State in Afghanistan have now denounced the Taliban takeover of the country. They have criticized the Taliban's version of Islamic rule. Islamic State had been highly critical of the deal last year between Washington and the Taliban that led to the agreement for withdrawal of foreign troops, accusing the latter of abandoning the jihadist cause. Following the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, a number of jihadist groups around the world congratulated them, but not the Islamic State. Now, the IS can be a possible threat, as the Islamic State group has a long desire to attack America, and many experts believe that the withdrawal of US troops and the ensuing chaos surrounding evacuations provide them with the perfect opportunity to strike.
We're ending this with a summary Saturday today, the 28th, by Newsmax, and then we'll just end up, we probably won't have any bumper music leaving. Exit. So here we go with a news summary by Newsmax.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Saturday Report. I'm Carl Higbee. Appreciate you guys joining us this morning. It's a very, very busy news cycle. There's a bunch of developments overnight, and we've got a lot to get to. General Mick McGuire, U.S. forces say they launched a successful drone strike near the Pakistan border on a member of ISIS-K who was accused of planning the attack. The Pentagon says that there are no reports of any civilian casualties at this point, but the move comes after Thursday's suicide bombing by ISIS-K, which killed approximately 170 people, including 13 of our own service members. That was near the Kabul airbase. Western forces are bracing for some more Afghan border in Uzbekistan. Holly, what are you hearing about the divisions forming on the ground, even amongst the Taliban and ISIS-K, and what can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. It looks like things are getting a lot worse before they get better in terms of any type of stability in Afghanistan. We're hearing a lot more now. Obviously, the Haqqanis have been given a crucial role, who are a designated terrorist group, but it seems that they are being given a much more bigger role, even behind the scenes, if you will, and they are a very elusive group, and they're happy to stay that way with the Taliban more at the front. And then even within that, I'm hearing a lot more today about divisions from people from different areas with allegiances to different countries. Obviously, some people have stronger ties to Pakistan, others to Iran. And so it sort of seems even within the Taliban.
The Hamid Karzai Airport, don't go there. And anything as far as evacuations are almost like a onesie-twosie, hop in the back of this pickup truck and off you go. What are you hearing about it on the ground?
Yeah, so I'm hearing that these streets are a lot more quiet today than they have been in the chaotic few days that we've seen, which means that people just essentially aren't getting out. And I'm receiving a lot of calls from people, should they go, should they not? I think people have kind of reached that point where that window has pretty much almost closed, I would say. So it's a lot of heartbreak, a lot of fear. People are trying to come up with smuggling routes, how they can get through to Tajikistan or to Pakistan. So I think even U.S. citizens may be okay to sort of get there eventually when they've given the go-ahead. But I think even for
stay safe out there. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, let's move to D.C., our Washington correspondent Logan Raddick from the latest on the government's response. Logan, what's up?
Well, Carl, you mentioned that the CIA's last airbase in Kabul has been destroyed by the U.S. military, and that comes with just 3 days to go until the withdrawal deadline is supposed to be in place, that August 31st deadline. And this comes after a suicide attack that killed 13 U.S. servicemen and women in Kabul. And right now, the Biden administration is saying that this is all part of their plan to retaliate against the terrorists. And here's what White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had to say about President Biden's promise.
they lost 13 of their own. And the president made absolutely clear that we are going to hunt down, go after, and kill the terrorists who are responsible. Everyone should be supportive of that.
Now, Carl, there's one problem right now, and that is that there is forensic data that's been obtained by the Taliban, actually a biometric database that has tracked Americans and Afghans. That's now in the hands of the Taliban. They're using it to hunt down Afghan allies and even potentially Americans that are still left on the ground. And the administration says about 1,000 people remain in Afghanistan.
Speculating and thinking that it was actually a real thing that they had this biometric data. Now we've confirmed that. Logan, thank you very much. We appreciate it.